welcome to the ETPHD Team Podcast, episode number 73 with myself, Anna. Hi, Anna, how are you?
Hello, I am... I'm well, a little bit uncomfortable. I have just had Invisalign fitted, so if I'm a little bit lispy, guys, you know why.
I haven't even noticed it at all, this whole conversation.
I can feel it, and I'm like stuttering. That was all right on some levels.
Does it feel tight when they put it in?
So these are trays. And at the moment, I think it's just everything in when they're in, I don't really feel it.
No.
But when they're out trying to eat, it's really odd. Really odd.
Because you have to take them out every time you want to eat, right?
Yes. So it's made me realize that I am a bit of a snacker.
I was going to say, like, that I feel like I would just be taking them in and out all the time.
Well, yeah, and obviously you're meant to keep them in like 22 hours or something, so I'm like, I'm just gonna have to eat bigger meals, guys.
Nightmare. We're grazers here, like, we're such grazers here. Because
can I just add, I saw Emma's question about who's got a bigger appetite.
Yeah, so for background people, Emma got on her Q&A box, someone said, who eats more, you or Amelia, and who's got a bigger appetite? I was like, no one would dare ask that question on my Instagram story.
What kind of day it is?
I know. Thing is, like, here, because we eat a lot of the same stuff, so we always have the same breakfasts around the apartment, we always go for lunch after the gym at the same place, and then we always go for dinner a lot of the time at the same place. So when you're around someone, obviously you recognize, like, I could tell you what Emma eats down to a T, but it's not because I'm sitting watching her eat, it's because we eat the same stuff every single day. But it just reminded me, like, people really do compare sometimes. And I know we talk about it in terms of, you know, don't care about what other people are eating and don't compare. And even if you're not doing that, still someone that concerns themselves with how much food you eat, which is just odd. Very odd. But hey, whatever helps someone sleep at night. I woke up this morning with a fever of 38.3 degrees, and it was like I'd been in the shower. It's not COVID, I've taken tests, I've decided I must have malaria from the mosquito bites that I've got. Like, it's the only answer.
I shouldn't laugh, but
the only thing it could be, like, it, you know, you don't get the flu in Mexico, so that's great. So I'm just trying to rehydrate myself. I thought I was going to have to cancel the podcast, but I'm well alive. All I needed was a soy latte and a couple of extra painkillers. It's not good for everything. Okay, let's crack on with the questions. Do you want to go first?
Yes. I can definitely say I'm no longer preoccupied by food, but I do think about it and I love it. I look forward to each meal and thinking about what I'm going to have. How do I differentiate between thinking about it too much and our favorite term, a healthy amount?
Good question. Like, it's totally normal to get excited about food if you are a bit of a foodie and you love food and you make good food. It's one of actually the cool things about having a good relationship with food is being able to just be excited about the food that you're going to eat. You can't quantify it, right? Two things. One is if it's having a positive impact on your life or a negative impact on your life is the first thing. Like, if you're genuinely just like, oh my God, I can't wait for my fried plantain tonight, which is what we eat every single night, fine. But if you are thinking from 10 o'clock in the morning, I can't wait for my dinner tonight, I can't wait for my dinner tonight, and you're consistently thinking about it throughout the day, then that's maybe something that you want to think, why am I still so excited? And actually it might be because it's still just because it's delicious, or it might be because actually you're bored, or it might be because you're hungry, or all of these other reasons why you might be preoccupied with food. I would say then maybe look at that. But if it's just like coming up to the meal and you're really excited for it, then that's fine. Don't think there's really a specific like time or anything that you could quantify it with.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, not that we only save certain foods for certain days, but Friday is my like baked goods day, just because I have more time to go to somewhere and get them. But all through the week, I'm like, can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Thing is as well, because it's like, say you're having donuts or whatever on Friday, you're not probably going to have donuts every day because it's expensive. And it almost, like, it's okay for food to have a bit of novelty. So for example, oh, it's Thanksgiving today. Certain foods that you have at certain times of year, like a Lent bunny, for example, although we say like, yeah, you want to include it throughout the month so you're not overeating on it, like as a simple Christmas tip, it still has novelty. It still has, what's the Christmas food or something. And that's not a bad thing. So like with donuts and stuff, you don't want to be having them every day because this is donuts, not donuts. You can have donuts every day if you want. But there's a novelty with donuts, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, I'm just trying to... Okay. I'm going to go to this next question. Denise client. I wondered if there's any link between being on the contraceptive implant, in particular hormone levels and disordered eating.
We had one similar, didn't we? It wasn't the implant base. I don't know if it's any different with that, but
yeah. So there's not a specific, yeah, there's not a specific link with contraception and disordered eating. It's disordered eating can be at a heightened, you could be at a heightened risk of disordered eating at certain times of your cycle or when you have certain hormonal fluctuations. But if you're on the contraceptive implant generally, your fluctuations are dampened, if not completely removed. So if anything, it might actually do the opposite and reduce your fluctuations in hormones and therefore potentially hunger and therefore potentially emotions and therefore potentially disordered eating, potentially. But there's no rationale as to why being on the contraceptive implant would negatively impact your eating habits. Like we said before, you're right, we were talking about the pill, I think, and the link is really the impact that it might have on hunger or the impact that it might have on mood as opposed to anything else.
I think it's easy to kind of blame it on that, but then also have a look at what else is going on in life.
For sure.
Are you under more stress? Has something else happened that might lead you to overeat? Or
for sure, I think a part of this is like the natural fallacy where we are so nowadays inclined to think that anything natural is better or healthier. And we've really seen this when it comes to hormonal contraceptives. It's like this big push as if there's something wrong with them. And for some people, they're not going to be great and it's personal choice. But I just think there's a really quick, they seem to be really quickly blamed for so much stuff. And I also think it's really unfair considering we're the ones that have to deal with the unwanted pregnancies and things like that if we're not taking them. But there's a lot of shame around sometimes taking them. Go for it.
Have you ever had ex-competitors come to yourselves looking to lose muscle mass? How do you approach this? And how long in comparison to fat loss is the process?
How long is a piece of dental floss? Really, if you like, I've never worked with someone that wanted to reduce muscle, I don't think. However, personally, I've lost a lot of muscle, so
not even in Mexico.
Yeah, who knew? Oh, it's so funny here. So we've been to the pharmacy a few times, and the pharmacies are like on every corner. They're more common than news agents or whatever you want to call them. And we've been in the other day, we went in for some tattoo cream, and you literally buy whatever you want to buy, and then they bring out a book and they show you the book and they say, do you want any of these? And it's like Anavar, Clen, and all of this stuff, and you say no, thank you. And then she puts it away, and then she gets another book out and she said, steroids, is anything else? And it's like, no, again, fine. And so, and then she just leaves the book out there whilst you're paying for your other stuff. It's crazy how simple it is to get steroids here, or the list of stuff is endless. Like you'll be having dinner and there'll be a outside a pharmacy just a list of things like Viagra, like again, Anavar, Winstrol, and then really, really strong painkillers like codeine or whatever it is, and just like Percocet, all the stuff that you hear about on like Selling Sunsets of like the Real Housewives or whatever, all being addicted. You know what I mean? You can buy them like whilst you're having your morning coffee. It's crazy. So no, but I haven't taken any, to be honest. I don't think you can tell. I'm not even trained for a week. Anyway, it realistically, you can lose muscle by keeping a lower target protein range. So going down to like the RDA of 0.8 grams per kilogram body mass would be fine. And reducing your training volume and reducing your RPE or increasing your reps in reserve, so you're never training to failure. Or I wouldn't take it out, but certainly like reducing your training volume overall is fine. And then how long it takes is going to depend on, for example, are you in a calorie deficit? Because then you'll probably lose it quicker. Are you eating the surplus? Because then you're probably going to lose it a lot more slowly. Or what's your activity levels like outside of resistance training? So many potential contributors to that. So there's not really a specific time frame, unfortunately.
No, do you know, I always find Carly really interesting to watch on that. The Carly amount she's changed her body, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, because she's wellness now, I think. Wellness athlete now, but she's a figure athlete, right?
So she, when I competed, she was figure and moved up to, what's the next one up? Physique.
Physique. Oh, I don't think I knew she did physique.
Got her pro card. I think she did one or two pro shows as physique and then has dropped back down and is now, like you said, going to do wellness.
Oh, yeah. So then maybe she's a good person to find out from how long that took. I think, and it also depends as well, as a side note, if you were ever assisted, because coming off any assistance is going to impact your muscle loss more quickly than if you were natural all along. I obviously don't know who this person is. Okay, how to practice awareness and acceptance in times like these when all I feel I want to do is eat away my feelings instead of facing them. So a bit of a background, this person was dating a bit of an a-hole. And oh, Emma's doing a wee saucy dance in the corner of my eye. That was a treat and a half. So she was dating someone who ghosted her and was actually has come to life. same. Who has then turned out to be a bit of an asshole, but she's struggling with a bit of overeating, and she's worked with me for a long time, and she's got a great relationship with food, but in the last week or two has been struggling with overeating again because of triggered by this difficult situation or asshole man, however you want to frame it. So how to practice awareness and acceptance?
Gonna go airy fairy and say the universe always has you back.
Yeah, I mean it works every time.
It is a blessing. You might not see it right now, but it is.
But this really, really is. She's told me some things about him. This is what we do with our clients. We just like to know all the ins and outs. And this is very much a blessing. And I think, when any relationship ends, regardless of how long it is, it can take a while for you to look back and think, geez, that was a lucky escape. But what this has done is highlighted maybe, right, this is a good time to think about the skills that we've got and working on awareness and acceptance again rather than eating. So, a little bit of a gift. I would say there's this kind of inclination that we have. I'm speaking to Emma about this the other day, actually. There's this inclination that we have as compassionate people or people who are trying to be compassionate, where we want to accept, forgive, move on so quickly because, forgiveness is self-care. Forgiveness is just easier than being resentful. Acceptance, we know, is easier than, suppression or anger or anything else. We know acceptance is helpful, but sometimes what we do in order to get to that point is we rush the crappy feelings and we just try and get rid of them as quickly as possible because we feel like that's what we should do to get to a place of like calm again. And I think that can be really detrimental. So for example, I was really mad at someone last week And I know at some point that I will forgive him, but at this point, I'm really angry. And rather than saying, it's not eating me up inside, I've accepted my anger. It's not me saying I'm accepting of the situation and I'm not going to feel anything about it at all because it's a situation. I'm saying I am raging and that's fine and I'm just going to sit with it. I'm going to journal, I'm going to full moon it out and all of these things. But I'm still raging and I'll be raging until I forgive him. And that might take however long it takes. So I think trying not to just quickly learn from something and trying not to quickly just get through something is actually really important. And it's quite common when we're trying to be more chill to start off with just trying to forgive everyone straight away. And actually that's not helpful and that's not self-care, because what you do is then you, and I've done this in the past myself, where I've forgiven people straight away. And they should never have been forgiven in the point of, I should have forgiven and then moved on, but instead I forgave and let them stay in my life. And all that does is repeatedly kick you, and you say, no, but I'm just forgiven and I understand and I'm accepting. And it's like, no, like you can forgive and you can accept, you can be aware, but you can still like sit with it and then move on. So I think being aware of that and being aware of, am I trying to just get out of this really quickly? And often that's when it leads to overeating and eating, because we think I shouldn't feel this way anymore. I'm such a chill person. I shouldn't feel this absolute seething anger that I'm feeling right now, because that's not who I am. And that's when we often turn to food.
It is my one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm 40 in a few weeks and it's really hit me like a ton of bricks that I am old and that I've not achieved what is expected of me by this stage of life. Any suggestions of how to combat these thoughts?
Hey, 40's not old. And I say this as a 35-year-old. 40's not old. I think it's really tough. I totally recognise the ageing pressure. And I totally recognise the aging kind of fear of not having achieved certain things that you feel like you should have achieved. So I don't know what it is for this person. It could be career, it could be relationships, it could be babies, it could be so many things. And I totally recognise, for me, I think it's about almost taking control. What I mean by that is, so for me, I feel the expectation of, I've not had babies yet, so I'm freezing my eggs. So for me, it's like, I'm going to take control of that situation as much as one can take control of that situation, as a means to just make me feel a little bit more empowered. So maybe think about, what do you feel like you personally want to achieve? Try and take away societal expectations of what you should have done, because societal expectations are useless when it comes to what's actually important to us as individuals. So taking that away, say like, what's important to me? What would I like to achieve so that when I'm turned 50, I don't feel the same way, and take control over that. So if it's something to do with your work, okay, well, can I do anything with work, or do I want to stay in this job for the next 20 years? Or if it's relationships, can I be more proactive in dating, if that's what the thing is? And I think sometimes there's a lot to be said for taking control and making a plan of processes as opposed to outcomes. You can't say, right, I'm going to have a husband in 9 months and then we will have a baby in 24 months. I don't mean like an outcome plan, but a process-based plan can be quite empowering.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, living for shoulds is just toxic, isn't it? And like you said, it's just the pressures of, well, probably comparisons, maybe. And if anything, call yourself on that, and like you said, just do what you need to do for your own happiness.
Agree. Okay, what options are there for satisfying vegan snacks?
I've got drawn a blank. I don't do you know what, I don't know why I used to have them, but the soy, I think it's Alpro, like puddings, the chocolate puddings are so nice.
Oh my God, they are so good. They remind me of when we used to grow up, when I was a kid, we were vegetarians and we couldn't have dairy. Like my brother couldn't because he had eczema. So we used to get soy dessert, which is the equivalent of that. And it was oh, it was just like the absolute treat of the week to get sorted there. Those things are great.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh no, do you know what it is? I bought the new protein puddings. You know, the yogurts that, is it, I cannot say it with Invisalign. I've just realized that. So I won't attempt again. But yeah, that's what made me think of it, because I've got two of those in the fridge. Mm. But yeah, the Outpro puddings. Oh, yes. So good.
Oh, they are so good. Vegan protein bars, fruit, nuts, that type of thing.
I'm going to say flapjacks as well. I'm sure you can make them pretty easily vegan.
Oh, yum. I love a flapjack so much. Mm. Yeah, bake something.
Yeah, I think, oh, that was gluten-free, but I'm sure Lucy would have some vegan options on her website.
She has everything. That's Lord Lucy. Lucy Lord. Her website. I don't know what her website is, but she's Lucy Lord on Instagram. I think, do you know what, I get asked a lot on Instagram, like, what are these good foods, and I think sometimes Google has a lot better answers in my brain in terms of, like,
you know, like, as a nutritionist there's that expectation, isn't there? I'm like, I don't know what you like.
Yeah I agree.
What I like is completely what I might find enjoyable, you might absolutely detest. So
yeah, for sure. And like, if you Google like vegan snacks, you'll get a list of like 100 on a website, and you can pick like the ones that you like. I really can't think of any more off the top of my head. I'm not really a big snacker, so I don't really know types of stuff that, yeah, I don't really know what you would like. So we were pretty useless there, other than apple, yogurts, fruit and nuts. So I apologize, and I would recommend Google for food sources.
Oh, it's me. Sorry. Okay. Well, this is definitely directed for you because I have no experience. Any tips for learning management skills? I now have a small team of three to manage, and I've noticed that my skills most certainly need addressing. I find it extremely difficult to explain to someone when they're doing something wrong, and instead I rectify it in order to save them from feeling bad.
Yeah, that's, I totally recognize that. Like, I totally understand that. So I can only speak from personal experience, right? My biggest issues with anything like that come from from being a people pleaser. So, and that sounds very similar in that you'd rather please them and do more work for yourself, but all that's going to do is lead to them making the same mistakes, when really, if you just said that's great, but actually could you do it like this, that's you solved for the rest of your life, as opposed to you then being stressed and resentful. Because your options are, you keep people pleasing, and in a year's time you've got zero boundaries, you're exhausted, you hate your job and you're resentful, or you do what they expect you to do and say, this actually isn't ideal, can we do it this way instead? That's what people expect of you. And I think framing it in a compassionate way, where when we are working with clients, right, we say there's the soft side of compassion and the tougher, fiercer side of compassion. And it's the same with when you're working with people. It's compassionate to say to someone, you know, great job, and praising people when they do a good job. But it's also compassionate to say, this isn't right, you can do better. And this is how you do better, because it helps them. It helps them grow when they know what they're doing wrong. It's constructive criticism. You're not shaming someone. You're not belittling anyone. You're simply, and I think what something is to be important, something to be mindful of, is making sure you're doing it in a compassionate way. So you're not telling someone they've done something wrong in front of other people, or you're not like favoriting certain people, because that can create like an environment of shame. But actually just having a conversation with someone in an adult way, people expect, like, I expect you to call me out if I do something. I'm like, I expect you to be like, no, that was like, that wasn't great, because it's the only way that as a team you can move forward. But people pleasing will screw you right over when it comes to managing. And my big brother is a people pleaser, and he never delegates enough, and then he gets really stressed. And from the outside, I just think, you're a martyr. Like, nobody's thanking you for doing this, and nobody is thanking you for doing this. Yes, being a martyr just screws everyone over. And I know that it comes from a place of people pleasing. So that's what I'd say. Call yourself out and be like, am I doing this to try and make everyone happy, or am I doing this because it's the best thing for the company or the best thing for this job? I don't know if it's this person's company or not.
No, if, just going by the second part in saying that it's, I find it extremely difficult to explain to someone when they're doing something wrong. It, in counselling today, it was about feedback and exploring what holds us back, what's blocking us from giving feedback. And maybe that's something worth exploring with yourself, whether it's because you've had bad experience, or like you said, you're a people pleaser, you're afraid of hurting someone, and then looking at how you can improve on that.
Oh, I like that. Really like that. Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. So yeah, do that. That's going to be give you more information than what I can give, for sure. Okay, what's the difference between body checking and complete body avoidance? Sometimes I'm in a good mood and want to admire my body, but every time this past week, when I knew it would upset me, I didn't. Where is the fine line between those things? When is it okay to admire or check it out?
It's always okay to admire. And I think from the sounds of it, it's you've been mindful of how you felt in your headspace, and so have chosen not to engage in it.
Yeah, I agree.
Self-awareness is fantastic.
I agree. It's kind of a spectrum, right? So you've got body avoidance on one end and body checking on the other, and we all exist somewhere on that spectrum. And for some people, body checking more often than others might be no issue, and for other people it is more of an issue. So there's no, again, there's no quantitative answer to this. To me, I would say, like, similar to what you said, if it's not causing you any stress, then that's fine, and it's totally okay to look at yourself and be like, yeah, I look banging, like, great. As long as it's not, you know, you're not there for 3 hours a day looking at yourself, then that's fine. And it's also totally okay to be like, oh, I feel really bloated today, or I feel a bit blah today, I'm just not really going to look in the mirror, I'm just going to crack home in my day. That's body image flexibility, that's also fine. So yeah, there is no clear difference. Think of it more like a spectrum, like a grayscale spectrum, and having that awareness is key. But the thing with body checking or body avoidance is, again, if you're avoiding stuff because you're genuinely terrified of it, or you genuinely, you know that it will make you feel bad for the rest of your day, or if you're checking so often you can't go to a mirror without looking at your body in the mirror and it, having an emotional reaction to it, then that's something to work on.
Okay. Newly qualified PT, I'm keen to hear your thoughts on whether experience on the gym floor is necessary or to go online straight away.
What are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts have changed.
Ooh.
I thought people should have experience on the gym floor. Mm-hmm. But I think lockdown forced many people to go online straight away. And I know personally, I feel like I'm a better coach online than I ever was on the gym floor.
Yeah, interesting. I think it's useful to do some time on the gym floor to understand what it feels like for people going into the gym who are not comfortable in the gym, to start to recognize where people go wrong when they're training in the gym and noticing people, how they train. I think it's really useful to do that. And I don't mean forever, but I do think it's useful to, it's very easy to see like the gym through your own lens of being comfortable in the gym. You've been someone that's gone to the gym before. And every time you go into the gym as a customer, you're not looking at other people, you're just cracking on. Whereas when you are there as a PT or gym instructor or whatever it is, you really recognize the way that people work, and you can see people who consistently train maybe slightly incorrectly or inefficiently. And then when it comes to working online with someone and maybe they are not getting results, or they potentially are getting injured, or they feel nervous around the gym, you have a lot more empathy and understanding. And it's really quite important. in terms of like, how would you know how to if you give someone a training program and you've put squats in it and they say, can you check my form, or how do I know if I'm doing it right, and you've never actually taken someone through a squat on the gym floor, how do you then think that you can translate that online to somebody who you can't even see, let alone have a conversation with and touch and, you know, with their approval? So yeah, I think it's useful. I also think why it's good to question, like, why you don't want to do that, and I don't know if this person does, but what's your reluctance to doing that? Because everyone has to start somewhere with online work, and if that's what you want to do, and if you want to be the best, then it's probably an essential part of being best. So look at why you maybe feel that you don't want to do that. And if it's because you don't want to be around people or work around people, then that's one thing.
Yeah.
But you're also one of the most amazing people to be around. So, and you have to be if you're a coach, even if you're online or not. People.
Did you enjoy it? Did you work on the gym floor?
Yeah, but only for a year and a half. No, I didn't love it. It was fine.
No, same.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
I always remember speaking to my old manager and being like, I love helping people, but actually putting yourself out there, I was like, that's not for me. That's not
for me. Emma and I were talking about this on AFM, actually, how a lot of people like struggle with confidence or struggle to get clients. It's like, how do you expect to get clients online if you can't even get clients in person? And so when you're working in person, being forced to say to people, hi, how was your workout? How are you? Actually approaching people and having a conversation is terrifying, but it's one of the best things you can do for your confidence as a personal trainer. And if you want to work online, to get clients, you have to be confident and you have to be able to speak to people and open up conversations with people. And that's very difficult to do if you've never done it in person before, I think.
For me, it was more the sales side of things. I'd quite happily chat to them and give them a little, like, if they needed any help, I'd be there, and then my manager would be like, that's when you go in. I'm like, no, they're fine. We'll just have another chat next week. It'd be fine.
Yeah. I mean, sales at the best times are hard for everyone. Well, a lot of people. Yeah. Okay. At work, we have an assembly rota and themes to follow. So this person is works in
school. I was going to say, I was like, oh.
Works in school. This would be for 11 to 13-year-old boys. One colleague was supposed to do the theme of love your body, but said she wouldn't because she thought the students would react inappropriately or badly or not get the message. I can understand their point that some could act immature, but how do you think we can approach these sorts of topics with teenage boys in a way to engage them and have them take the message in the right way? I was going out decoration shopping. Oh wait, that's something else.
I was like, where is this going?
So how can you approach love your body type of messaging specifically with teenage boys?
Going off on a slight tangent, there was a news thing that I heard earlier in the week, and it was actually around porn and like young men, like college students, and they were all invited to speak with an interviewer and had all agreed and then decided not to because they were worried about the assumptions that would be made about them. And I think there's, or the judgments made on them if they spoke up.
About porn?
Like, and their experiences around it.
Okay. That's.
And I think there's still, with guys in particular, they don't want to speak up. And so I think with this sort of thing, it's really important to invite them and let it be just an open, safe space.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really, really tough. And obviously we don't work with kids, so we're not trained in that. But Steph recently went to a school in Scotland and taught body image to some of the younger girls and got on really well with them and came at it from a really relatable, inclusive perspective, but it was just women or young girls, should I say. I think coming at it from their perspective, how does body image play into young guys' perspective? Again, we don't know, we're not young guys, but there's got to be people that do know that. Like, for example, Lewis, who is a really great coach. Lewis, his Instagram is Lewis Get Results. Yeah. And we were speaking about this recently because he used to be really overweight and is now not. And he was talking about this exact thing of how do you get this type of messaging into schools, into young lads who maybe struggle with their health or their body image. And I don't know what the answer is other than asking them. So rather than inflicting stuff on them, asking, like opening up and saying, like, what do you feel about like body chat? What do you feel about your health? And incorporating it into an overall health perspective rather than just a love yourself type of chat. Because they're probably not going to be able to relate to that very well. It's kind of useless, but I would say like putting it out to them rather than putting it, like any of the stuff, rather than putting it on them. Definitely don't put it on them. That's a whole other world.
There was a book, I was just looking at it, Body Happy Kids, and it's aimed at parents to talk to their children about body image. Ooh. So it might be a little bit young, but it might also give you some ideas on how to tackle it.
Oh, helpful, thanks.
It's my one again. I'm so bad today. anything specific, tricky word, for menopause and how to combat the inevitable HRT weight gain that keeps being banded around?
It's not inevitable at all. If anything, HRT will potentially do the opposite. Because the reason that people struggle sometimes with weight during menopause is that you get a redistribution of body fat from your hips and thighs towards your stomach. And it's just a redistribution as opposed to fat gain. So, but with HRT, that minimizes it a little bit. The other reason that people might gain weight during menopause is that their NEAT levels will go down potentially and their hunger levels will go up because their sleep is impacted. But it's not that energy balance is different. It's just that, well, energy balance is different, but it's not that your BMR is different. It is literally just that you potentially are eating more and moving less because of lack of sleep, potentially because of mood fluctuations, etc. But HRT will help to minimize those things. So if anything, that should actually potentially stop that from happening. And also what happens during menopause is that your estrogen levels drop, but again, HRT minimizes that. And so when your estrogen levels drop, like estrogen is important for muscle maintenance and muscle building. But if you're on HRT, that minimizes that. So the best thing I can say is to not go into this thinking that you're going to gain weight, to not go into this with the limiting belief that actually things are going to go that way, because you're doing coaching, you're training, you're focused on your relationship with food, you're getting HRT, you should, like, it's still going to be a bit of a challenging time, like it is for every woman, but it's not going to be as challenging, hopefully, as you think it is, and in terms of your body composition, much less.
Mm. Yeah, nothing to add on that one.
Mm. Okay, let's do one last question. We're going to keep it a little bit shorter today because I have this fever. And you have the list. And I'm noticing even the word choices that I'm saying. I'm like, that's not the word that meant to come out of my mouth. I don't want to say something stupid. Okay. How did you find your passion in life? So this is for both of us. I keep feeling a pull to leave the career I am in. And people always say you should turn your passion into a career or do something you are passionate about. But I don't think I know what mine is. And I'm not sure how to find it or where to start.
I'd lean into that, Paul, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but over the years I just listened to my gut so much more.
Yeah.
And I think, like, again, I know we've spoken about values and it kind of comes down to that, and it's almost like my gut tells me when I need to do something and check in with values. And it was Steph, wasn't it, that was like, I can't live with the regret. She doesn't want to live with regret. And you don't know unless you try.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really easy to look at someone who's in a job that they want to be in and think, oh, they've got it all sorted. But we've both done jobs that we've just thought, what on earth is this? Like, this is not for us. And I'm with you, like, fully focused on my gut feeling a lot of the time and instinct. And on paper, was it the smart thing to do to leave a university lectureship to go self-employed? Probably not. But I knew in my gut it was the right thing to do. And so in terms of like what you're passionate about, like, no one can answer this for you but you. And the best thing to do is try stuff. You're never just going to wake up one day and be like, do you know what? I'm really passionate about this, like bike riding or whatever it is. Because you have to actually go out and experience different things and meet different people and speak to people and try different hobbies. And that's how you find out what you're passionate about, by actually trying different stuff. So I would say that, like, make plans, travel, or don't even mean abroad, but like travel around and just meet different types of people. And on your social media, branch out and start looking at people that do different things to you and have different bodies and different lives, and really immerse yourself in things that are just completely different to you and think, oh, that sounds interesting, let's just go and try it. And I think there's a lot to be said for just trying new things. And realistically, if it doesn't work out, you could try something else. And yeah, that's where I'd start.
I don't know how feasible this would be, whether obviously married, children, but where possible, spend some time on your own. And just get to know you.
I agree. I think it's really easy to say that if you're like us and you don't have like we do have dependents in our own way, actually. But yeah, I think spend some time on your own and then actually use that time. Don't just sit there and think, I wish I wasn't on my own. Like, actually use that time and travel and do things. And yeah, and don't rush it. Because the world is your oyster, and how exciting is that? And read a lot. That's also great for inspiration. Okay, thanks everyone for your question. Sorry that my sentence structure was poor and Anna had a bit of a lisp. We'll be back to normal next week, and keep your questions coming in. Thanks, bye. It is the last few days to sign up to coaching for the new year for ETPhD coaching, so if you would like to, then go to www.emilia.fitness, almost forgot there, and apply, and you can chat to one of our coaches.